You're listening to OK Boomer with Ralph Odierna and Victoria Greenwood, only on LA Talk Radio.
OK Boomer is back. Oh my God, it's a year since we've been in the studio. Hello,
wow.
Victoria.
Hi.
Look, I got to tell you guys, we've missed you, and I know you didn't miss us. Anyway, we are very excited to be back here. OK Boomer is a show where there are many times you will hear just intellectual genius, witty banter, and some sage advice. And then the other times we let our guests speak. But that's what we do here. But I'd like to say, you know, coming out of COVID, we're all trying to get back to normal. California, get back to normal. Our first guest was supposed to be Angela Marsden. She is the host of this show with the Pineapple Hill Saloon. Keep supporting the Pineapple Hill Saloon.
Yes.
But Angela, who I think, in my personal opinion, personally led the recall effort against Gavin Newsom the day they shut her restaurant down and opened up craft service for a TV show of 150 people right next door to her. And she was on camera just crying as she was about to lose her business. That went viral. That spurred a movement. And Angela, everybody in this state loves you. Everybody cares about you. The reason she's not our first guest is she became a grandmother.
Yes, she did.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
And she's out there in Hoosier country, Indiana, with her son, Devin. And I don't know what her granddaughter's name is because that's just who I am. So I had to go out and find another big name guest. And
is he here yet?
Here's the thing. OK Boomer will bring guests that other studios are afraid to because they're afraid to make that phone call. I'm not afraid to make that phone call. So what I have in studio today, Bob Dean, the number one Hugo car salesman in the state of Tennessee.
Yep, four and three surrounding states.
And three surrounding, get on that mic there, Bob.
I beg your pardon.
And three surrounding states. Tennessee, Hugo car salesman. Who else brings you that, Victoria?
I
That's
mean,
right.
You do, Ralph, right? only you.
That's why I had to leave Tennessee. And most people don't even remember the Yugo. It was it was made in Yugoslavia. They were imported in 1986.
And by the way, most of the audience doesn't know Yugoslavia.
I know. Well, get to know it right here because I'm half Yugoslavian from Serbia, but I don't know what it's called now or anything.
Right, it's Serbian Croatia.
Croatian.
From the good side, I guess.
You're talking about half the audience, I guess. This is the half that we're going to go.
I don't know what's going on the world anymore. Thus the high cheekbones and the back hair. I got that from my grandfather. Thanks.
See, the funnier joke would have been I got that from my grandmother.
No, my grandmother was stunning.
Yeah.
Ruby.
So anyway, we'll get to you in a second, Bob. So Victoria, you and I got to keep in touch a lot during COVID.
We did indeed, Ralph.
But your life has changed.
Yeah.
You got to concentrate more on some projects. I mean,
I still am concentrating on projects, some of them that you're aware of.
No, I know, but your work schedule, unfortunately, had to slow down at times. There were some shutdowns.
Oh, yeah. You mean the world shutting down?
Yes.
Yes, the world shut down. The entertainment industry shut down.
That was.
Yeah. Pretty much I was boxed into my house. The theater, because I'm in a theater, shut down. Everything shut down, essentially. And it reopening still is strange.
You know, what a lot of people don't realize, and you know, enough time has passed that I hope it's not too touching to you, but, you know, during COVID, when you died, your loved ones couldn't say goodbye, and Victoria lost her grandfather during COVID.
I lost both my grandfathers during COVID.
And
my Italian grandfather passed away in December of COVID, actually.
Right.
And that was strange because my first grandfather who passed away, he didn't pass away from COVID, but you couldn't have a funeral or gathering. And then because my other grandfather passed away of COVID, how they dispose of your body and, like, you can't say goodbye. Like, it was very it's very strange. The whole thing was very weird. It still is.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. No. And what's tough is you can't say goodbye to your loved ones.
No.
You know, look.
While they're, as they're progressing, you can't even, for
you can't
any
talk
reason,
to them.
You can't get close to them.
Yeah. They played on the, the phone for him in the hospital room where he got to talk to his really good friend that was the one who helped take him to the hospital, my other grandfather, but yeah.
I'm going to try not to make this show about COVID, but what hurts, I guess, is how many loved ones were affected. You know,
yeah.
that their parents or their grandparents were in nursing homes; they couldn't mm-hmm. visit them, or they were in the hospital. They had children in the hospital; couldn't visit their children in the hospital.
Yeah.
I think we're going to look back on this 10 or 15 years into the future and look back to this day and say, we just screwed it all up. We just overreacted. We panicked. We were feared. And we hurt so many people, the businesses that were lost, ugh. The divorces that yeah. happened, the spousal abuse that happened.
Yeah.
The weight that was gained.
Oh, my God.
Or lost.
I went from dating to eating, and now I can't get into my own pants.
Yeah. I mean, there you go. There you go, Rob.
I'm glad we're back, and I'm glad that looks like June 15th, California supposedly back to normal. I keep going back to Florida because that is normal.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. I've only been inside of California this whole time. I haven't traveled outside, so I've had a lot of people tell me that, like, they can eat. When I went to Vegas, actually, I did go to Vegas, and that was really strange. Being in a room with people with no masks on, like it was like a club. They had masks. It was weird.
Right.
I was not used to it. I was like, am I doing something wrong? Am I going to get in trouble for this? It was very strange.
Yeah, I mean, our entire lives became eyes wide shut. That's what the whole thing
is. Yeah.
So we do have a guest, Bob Dean, who I gave a little brief intro. Now, Bob, you've been in California for quite a while, and not that you're a celebrity, but you've bartended in celebrity joints. You're a stand-up comic. You have one of the funniest commercials I've ever seen out there. The man's in a thong.
Oh, are you?
Well, it's an orange Speedo.
Okay, okay. And those are different, Ralph.
Whatever.
One goes up your butt, the other does not.
Extra tight on purpose to accentuate the rolls of flab hanging down.
So, Bob, you're not from the Nashville area, though.
My family's original. I was born in now historic Levittown, Pennsylvania, the planned suburb.
Okay.
And my father, his career was just starting off, and they bought a house there sight unseen. Lived there, and it was, you know, people make fun of the suburbs like that, but it was right out of the Wonder Years, which was a great program.
Right? Yeah,
exactly how it was. And then my father, he spun off and he moved his independent business from there to Nashville because he was really like 30 years ahead of his time. He foresaw the growth that now ruined the city, in my opinion.
Right.
But anyway, I tell people I grew up in Nashville, but I guess I'm half damn Yankee.
Okay, okay.
But my southern accent goes on and off depending on how much gin I've had.
I get one sometimes when I'm just angry, but I think that's what ends up happening for me.
Your family has a lot of roots in the Nashville area.
Yes, they do. Really? They do indeed. Yes. They do indeed. I did live there when I was a very little kid. I only lived there for like a year, and then my mom's an actor, couldn't handle it, and we moved straight back. I was there for the snow, and I did not enjoy it.
Oh, so you're such a young...
Get on that mic, Bob.
I'm sorry. You're such a young lady and a beautiful one at that.
Oh, thank you so much.
So that must have been, what, in the 80s or 90s? Or
It was in the 90s.
In the 90s?
Yeah.
Because your mother must have been, and respectfully, a pioneer, because everybody, you know, Nashville is like, you know, I knew people that sold, like... A home in North Hollywood mm-hmm. built in 1950, you know, what, 3 bedrooms, 1 bath. And they could take what they sold that for.
Yeah.
Go to Tennessee, Nashville, Brentwood, Bellevue, my stomping grounds was Brentwood, Bellevue. And which is now so overpriced, you can't even get near it.
I think I lived in Belmead,
sure.
Yeah.
Belmead's old money. Belmead's Hancock Park.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's like the only thing I remember. But yeah, it's because
my family had some dough.
Well, it's because my grandfather was a country singer, and so
what's his name?
Both of them are. So
I wish I'd known all this before. But I could have asked.
Don't ask me any questions about it.
He was more of a drum guitar player.
Yes,
his name was Kenny Rogers.
He's not a guitar player. Kenny Rogers and then Lee Greenwood. Yeah, Lee Greenwood's the other one.
No kidding. That's fascinating. Kenny Rogers. Rogers is a really nice guy.
And then her other grandfather is Lee Greenwood.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love Lee Greenwood?
Yeah.
I'm not joking. They're fascinating. I mean. No, it's you know, I'm
he's
not,
cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because your grandfather, Kenny,
yeah,
if I may call him by his first name.
I mean, that's how he goes.
He did a one of those private parties that big lawyer did at Wolfgang every year.
Right.
And I was, because I loved my mom, my mother, everybody loved Kenny, you know.
Yeah, I mean, women
they
definitely
swooned
did.
Over him. Yeah.
Yep.
I talked to your step-grandmother, maybe. Or
Marianne or Margot?
Marianne and yeah. Margot. They used to come, Marianne would come into La Scala all of the time.
My grandma, Margot's probably watching this right now, so...
Say hello
Shelby,
to her.
Yeah,
and
Grandma
they were
Margo.
The most lovely ladies, and they tipped real fat.
Yeah, they do. Marianne's great. They're actually Marianne, in Hawaii for my Uncle Chris's wedding.
Right now. 6 degrees of separation in this town just cracks me up. This town is so huge, but
you have no idea.
It's neat. That's really cool.
I'm bellied up to the bar at the Grand Havana Room, and Victoria happened to be behind the bar that day. We were just talking, and something came up. I said, yeah, I moved out here in 1989. She says, oh, where'd you start? I said, well, fortunately, I knew this guy that was looking for a roommate because he was about to be on tour, and his ex-girlfriend was known to come in and tear up his place because the breakup wasn't very nice. Mm. And she goes, and she starts laughing. She goes, who? I said, Janie Lane. And she goes, you know Janie Lane. I said, yes, his fiance that caught him cheating was Becca, who was on tour with Belinda Carlisle at the time. She goes, okay, you do know Janie. I'm like, why? She goes, my mom was engaged to him.
All throughout high school. All throughout my high school, into college.
Her, okay. Her, for like mom 6 years. And I had this exact same circle of friends in the exact same years, but we didn't know each other.
Yeah.
That's so neat.
Isn't it?
Yeah. That's pretty
crazy.
Well,
see, now I can drop your name all over town, too.
I mean, if you want to, it's not going to...
You turned out so nice, because I went to, just for the half an hour we've been talking.
Sure.
For, I went to high school with Johnny Cash's brother, Tommy Cash's son and daughter. And yes, I'll say it, they were just the...
Oh, wow.
They were just out of control, wild children, thought they were all that and this and that.
That's crazy. Johnny Cash is so cool, too, man.
Oh, no, he was great. And June Carter.
He's my favorite. Yeah, the whole Carter family. Oh, yeah. There's a documentary about the Carter family, too. It's fantastic. Yeah.
And Reese Witherspoon, who her brother John and I used to be drinking buddies when I rent, and Pee Wee Herman's sister is from Nashville.
Okay, Bob, I'm going to have to say something about...
I'm going all over the place.
About dropping names. I was told that when someone drops a name, it's because they don't think highly of themselves and they're trying to boost themselves. It's kind of classless. That was told to me by Marlon Brando.
Oh, my God.
Well, I really don't drop names. I'm actually the most tight-lipped bartender in town.
Okay,
this
joke
is just
bombed.
Fun because...
Yeah. I got it.
Well, but then it made me think. But that's just it, is that I don't drop names and... being at Wolfgang for so many years and La Scala. I had the opportunity. I've met hundreds, literally, of big time stars like your grandfather, he was just such a nice guy. And like I said, it wasn't like sat around and had dinner or whatever, but the interaction to the help, you know, which is me there, and it's you can tell when it's genuine because
but you too,
100%. Well, and I grew up with celebrities my whole life, and people of all different kinds of in fields being successful, some of the richest men and women that I grew up with, and being in service as a bartender or a server and seeing how people treat you differently, it's so funny because I'm like, you have no idea where someone comes from or why they have this job. And I even remember being in conversation with people who I won't name necessarily, but they were talking about the banjo, and I play banjo, and I was talking to them. I do, and I was talking about the banjo, and this woman's, we'll say it's her aunt, wants to be a country singer, and I was like, oh yeah, the banjo, and I started talking about it, and they're like, well, why do you know about the banjo? I'm like, I play banjo, and they're like, well, why do you play banjo? And I'm like, well, if you want to get into it, like, long story short, like, had to go to the Grand Ole Opry when I went to part of the curriculum in Nashville, and I was raised around Dolly Parton. And they're like, oh, listening to her music, and I'm like, no, I was raised around Dolly Parton. My grandfather's Kenny Rogers. And literally, they got silent, looked at me, and they're like, why do you have a job? And I'm like, I literally remember calling my dad and like thanking him for like always making me work. And like, I've worked at like Jamba Juice and Baskin Robbins. And like, I've been paying bills since I was 5 from commercials I booked. But it's such a different mentality. But I see like those people who know who my grandfather is, how they treat me differently. And I'm like, I almost wish you didn't know, because that's more of
it
a character telling.
It can make people uncomfortable, too, because they don't know. You know, like I can spot a phony a mile away. And, of course, being behind a bar in Beverly Hills, I know you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You can tell when they come through the door if they're going to be like, don't you know who I am? Or I'm not going to pay for this wine or whatever.
Yeah.
But most people are lovely and sincere and humble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the best ones.
What I was getting to, though, is that you said it can make some people uncomfortable. They don't know how to approach you or what they should say. Or
they just don't understand. And I went to Calabasas High School, which was just nothing but, really rich kids, rich mm-hmm. kids that we were, they're all gifted by being rich. And you know, it was just great. Or family members that had, I can't even think of words. I need more caffeine, Ralph. You know, they had families that were celebrities, but just their mentality for work and how they took for granted money and their own work ethic and how crappy it was. It's just really unfortunate because it's so different. And I see that, and I see it within my own family and my brothers and myself and how hard we work and how, you know, I always say, like, don't give me a job. Give me an opportunity and I'll prove to you that I deserve the job. And there's a difference because I know what I do is good and because I craft and I work really hard at it. But, like, I will never rely on being related to someone. I think it's so fucking stupid.
Yeah.
It was like,
but you are a very grounded individual. So I want to give you props for that.
Thank you. I don't, you know, my mom does help with those things no matter how crazy she is.
Kenny, your mom, her dad was Kenny.
No, that's my dad.
Okay.
Yeah. My dad is Kenny Jr. I have a very, it's a very confusing, long LA story. You can read about it on my IMDb. So there's that. But my mom is a wonderful, crazy person, but her crazy is why I'm cool. So
very cool.
Well, I'd like to meet her sometime. I know Ralph already knows her from our brief chat before.
Yeah, no, her mom's aces.
Cool.
No,
yeah,
her mom is, I can tell you right now, your mom could have went into a very different direction had she
absolutely
wanted to or chosen to, and she didn't. And so your mom happens to be a very grounded person as well.
Yeah, she's got a crazy life.
Right. You know, I mean, her nickname, I just found out.
She-Rock?
Yep.
How'd you find that out? Did I tell you that?
We're already.
No, stomach, and someone named Pumpkin Pie.
Oh, yeah.
Called her She-Rock.
She's the reason, what's the movie Almost Famous?
Right.
It's about Pumpkin Pie.
Is it really about her?
Yes, it is indeed. She dated the guys from Led Zeppelin and stuff.
How come we haven't had her on the show?
We could just invite all my mom's friends on the show at this point. I could just go down the list. There's the chick from The Crow that was my mom's friend.
Wow.
Yeah, there's like all of them.
Yeah, so Pumpkin Pie called her She-Rock.
Yeah, that's her nickname. So funny. It is Pumpkin Pie.
Oh, I'd like to meet her sometime. Yeah. That sounds cool. So that's what sometime I'd like to sit around and just chat with you, only because there's the 6 degrees of separation.
Sure.
I had a lot of, from just, most of the people that I knew in country music business were behind the scenes.
Okay.
And I'm not going to drop any names, but we need to talk to you about it.
Yeah, sure.
I will drop this one name real quick, then I'll stop. Miss Sarah Cannon, Minnie Pearl. A good friend of mine, Julie, you know, last name is mentioned. Her father was the governor of Tennessee for the 2 terms. So the governor's mansion was right next door to Minnie Pearl's house, Sarah Cannon's house. So the families were great friends. And back in the late 80s, when Julie got married, Sarah Cannon threw a couple of cocktail parties, like at the Bellmead Club and that sort of thing. And I got to meet her more than once. And she was the sweetest, most wonderful people. One of the most fun things that ever happened to me is because I was standing more in Miami at the time and going back and forth. And I went to home for Christmas and I was shopping by myself at Green Hills Mall, or whatever it's called now. And this voice goes, Bob, Bob. And I turn around, she's in this full fur coat and she's waving. She's like, Bob. And I'm like, Miss Sarah. And we thought I was, but she was just the nicest, coolest lady.
That's awesome.
Yeah. By the way, I like some of those subtleties of the South, like when you say Miss in front of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you have to.
I dated a gal that lived in Memphis for a little while. And, you know, and I'm still friends with one of her friends on Facebook, this gal, Leanne Seiler. And every time I'll say something, I say, Miss Leanne, you look very nice today.
Robert. Or
it's literally, so the funny, the duality of that is like living there, you have to do that. You get corrected. And if you don't do it, like you're a peasant. You're like, why do you talk this way? It's Miss, Ma'am, Mr., Miss, like that's how it is. Like you have to do that. And then being here, I remember coming back and being just like a 7-year-old and coming back and being calling everyone like Mr. or Mrs. Ma'am and being yelled at, like, what do I look old?
Right.
Like, what is wrong with you?
So friggin' offended. Yeah.
And then as an adult woman, like, I remember someone was hitting on me one time and he was from Nashville and he was like, oh, Miss Victoria. And I was just like, that was the most attractive thing I've ever heard in my life. I'm like, man, how I've missed that. It's so different.
You know, I like it.
Our show is called OK Boomer, right? So sometimes I have to pick on your generation.
No, go ahead.
And this was a gal that was younger than you and at Dantana's. And I was explaining some of the dive bars in L.A. And she's like, she told me I was wrong on one of them. I said, no, I don't think so. She says, really? You're from New York? I grew up here. I said, "You're 22. I've been living here 30 years."
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Unbelievable.
You're from New York.
How long have you been living here now?
On August, I rolled into town on August 4th, 2004, in my Buick station wagon with the wood grain sides and a U-Haul. And that was 16 years ago.
Was that strictly to become an actor or stand-up comedian? Because you know, your stand-up routine is as hilarious.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm a pretty funny guy, and it's all observational humor. And the thing about it is I come from a conservative family. And the fact that I'm gay now, it's not a secret no more. But, you know, growing up in Tennessee, you know, and on the, you know, in the part of town that we're describing, and whatever, it doesn't matter. And I hit it. I quit college and moved to Florida to get it, you know, because I was so freaked out.
Sure.
And, of course, after I finally did come out, I found out that my three best buddies, my folks... My mother was more upset that I didn't like football.
Oh, really?
And I did that in my act. I came out to her on Christmas Eve. I was 28 and can come from a huge football background. And my mother, Stella, God rest her soul, she was a cross between Maude and the mother from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, wow.
But I said, "Mother, I have something to tell you. I'm gay." And I started crying. And she put her hands on my shoulders. And, you know, and it was a very emotional time. And I said, and she said, she looked right at me. She goes, "You're my son, and I will love you forever."
Oh, that's awesome.
Then I, because I was all cocktailed up, I said, "Well, maybe I'll take this opportunity to tell you, Mom, I really don't care for football." And she freaked out. She's like, "Says what?" She goes, "Did you hear what he just said, Robert? How can you hate football? What am I going to tell the neighbors? It's sacrilegious." So great. But my family's a big Penn State fan, though, and Vanderbilt.
Right. Do you remember the guy that played the attorney on Will and Grace?
Yeah.
So he's from the South, too, and he calls his mom. He says, "Mom, I got to tell you, I got a new role. I have a feeling it's going to be a hit show." She goes, "Oh, my God, what do you play?" He says, "I play a gay attorney." She goes, "Oh, God, I got to tell my friends you play an attorney?"
But back, just back to how the thing that I went into that whole long story is that being behind the bar for so many years. That's how I got started in it. I tried to get a real job. My father said, "We paid a lot of money for your education. You need to come back to Nashville and get a real job." And I did. That was a great job with a lovely small family-owned Bellamy company. And they were really good to me. But I just didn't like it. Wasn't
Is
for
that
me.
The Hugo job?
No. That's how I got into the Hugo job was because...
I wasn't kidding when I said he was the number one Hugo salesman in the state of Tennessee.
It's a great story. I moved back when I was 24. Well, first I moved, and then I came back. But I still didn't come out of the closet. And then I went back again. So that's why my love-hate relationship with South Florida, you know, Miami, so I was in the 80s. And God, it was wild. It was Scarface, baby. That's exactly what it was.
Sounds cool.
And then I lived on South Beach in the late 80s and 90s when I moved back. And South Beach was the coolest. It's not, no offense, but it's changed so much.
Sure.
But back at that time when the gentrification was just starting and it was all students or gay people or drag queens.
Right.
Oh God, I'm out all over the place. I'm so excited to be here with you.
That's awesome though.
Stand-up comedy. Where was I going with that? Stand-up comedy. It's the same thing. Being behind the bar.
Sure.
And because now I'm the mean bartender. I mean, I'm not mean. I'm a really good guy, but it's just like I said, and I that's why
I got to pick and choose at this point in my life.
But I'm saying just from talking with you, I can tell you're not going to take any crap from anybody.
Yeah, that's just because of how I was raised.
Right.
I learned a long time ago like that I'm still learning things and still unlearning things. Like I don't – if someone's making me uncomfortable, I don't have to necessarily – feed into it. I can be like, "Thank you so much. Goodbye."
Mm-hmm. And it's just what. Excuse me.
No, you're fine.
I don't want to sexually harass anybody.
You did it. You didn't sexually harass me. I'm good.
People, thank you. People, you know, people that are in the service industry, you know, girls and guys, can get really rattled and upset when some jerk, you know, plays. The best thing to do, I just give it. They say something really stupid, like, "Oh, I can't believe you're still a bartender," and I just give it three beats.
Oh yeah.
And then just, you know, boom. But the whole thing about
it. Oh, I've said some sass. Ralph's probably been present for a lot of it. I'm pretty on point with my comebacks. Like there should be a live studio audience when I'm working for sure.
Can I tell you one story real quick?
Yeah,
that's really fun. Well, I worked at La Scala, and with all due respect to everybody's background, but you have to set the scene. It was these two Persian women about my age, and they're dripping in gold and diamonds. Like every time I put a gallon of gas in my Buick, their bank account goes ching ching. And it was, I was waiting tables this one day, and I had all these plates in my arms, and it was packed. And there was a line down the street, and they came in, and they just sat down at a dirty deuce, a dirty two-top. And I had all these plates, and I stopped, and I very politely said, I said, ladies, I'm sure there won't be a problem, but you really need to check with the hostess before you sit down, because we're on a wait. And the woman, loud, she goes, look at you. She goes like, look at you. A man, she didn't even look at me at this. She looked at me for a second. She goes, a man of your age doing this for a living, you should be ashamed. And she and her friend, they started laughing, like really loud. And the whole patio got quiet, and I was just standing there. Like, and I go, the reason I could do this for a living is because I don't have someone like you at home sucking the life out of me. And her jaw just dropped. But that just gets back into the comedy thing, being behind the bar for so many years. And when I decided to move out here, My father passed away suddenly, and then my mom didn't give a crap about anything, and her health declined, so I went back to Tennessee. She passed away. I'm just kind of rattling around in the family townhouse out in Bellevue, and I just decided a buddy of mine who is pretty successful behind the camera out here was like, you need to come out.
Yeah.
He goes, you know, and I was like, I had nothing to keep me there. I was like, sure, why not? Because I'm like 2 credits away from 3 different degrees, but none of that stuff. Money doesn't interest me.
Sure.
And fame doesn't. I mean, it would be great to be able to make some coin off of doing what I love, doing stand-up. And it is fun to be recognized. It sometimes.
I have to ask you a question, because I know you fairly well over the last 6 years, but you don't seem to be depressed like most comedians I know.
It's a great front, ain't it?
Yeah, it really is, though.
It truly is.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I found, working on 45 different projects, I found a copy of the New York Times thing. It's a special thing about what makes people laugh, and comedians and this and that and the other thing. And, of course, you read about comedians. Yeah, we're all a mess.
Yeah.
We're a mess. And some of the things, you know, like I said, I come from a conservative family. My brother is this big-time international businessman. And we are polar opposites, but we're like this.
Yeah.
He's one of the few people that gets me.
Right.
You know? And like I said, we're all pretty wacko. And I've had, you know, I went to this doctor back in the 90s, and I'm like, I'm depressed. And you know why? Because everybody was depressed in the 90s.
Sure.
Remember when it was like nothing to just go out and, you know, get a prescription for something?
It's still that way.
Well, I go to the doctor.
We definitely over-medicate kids today.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And I told some of my friends. Do you remember the restaurant Mirror that used to be on 12th Avenue South?
No.
Or anyway.
12th Avenue South?
In Nashville.
Oh, sorry. Local history.
But so I go to this doctor, and I'm like, I'm depressed. And she's like, okay. And she writes me this script, and I didn't look into it or anything like that. So I start taking this Zoloft, something real heavy duty, started with an M. And I told like 3 or 4 of my close friends, I'm like, I'm taking antidepressants. And they're like, well, you're still an asshole. I'm like, I know. And I just can't get an erection now, too.
Oh, my God.
You know? So that, but yeah, there's a lot of comics who.
Yeah, they talk about it. My whole perception of it, I think, too, is like with, at least with acting, in order to do comedy well, you have to be able to do drama really well and kind of understand like that part of the human soul. So in my mind, my favorite comedians were the ones that always like battled with depression to some really deep degree, and that's why they're so funny, is because they understand the spectrum of the human soul so well.
Well, thank you.
Because otherwise it's like, otherwise it's just like you can be very surface layer, but if you don't understand what it feels like to be truly sad, then how are you supposed to make people laugh?
Right.
Well, it's their escapism.
Sure.
You know, you look at
Robin Williams
or Belushi,
my favorite. Yeah,
Richard Pryor.
Yep.
You know,
I had the opportunity on my podcast, The Bob Dean Show, a little shameless plug there. A fellow that I met through that's how I have the opportunity to have so many fascinating guests on my show, is meeting them at the bar. But this gentleman who was in an improv group with Robin Williams.
Oh, that's cool.
Right before he got. His career took off. I think he just were there. He was in negotiations for Mork and Mindy or whatever. But he has these tapes. It was a class project.
Yeah.
So he sat down and interviewed Robin Williams about his thoughts and hopes and goals and this and that. And he came and we played him on my show. So I hope you'll listen to it because he was fascinating. Because you know he was always so over the top.
Yeah.
Listening to these interviews that these two, you know, students were doing together. He's talked so quietly and so passionately about what he, you know, his thoughts and acting and this and that and the other thing. It was just fascinating. He was really a cool guy.
That's awesome.
But yeah, his life ended tragically.
I think COVID is speeding something up that's going to hurt actors, to be honest with you. The self-tape auditions.
I don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah, see?
Mm-hmm. I thought I was the only one.
No.
God, they're awful.
First,
awful.
You can't play off, as a producer or a director, you can't play off of them. Mm-hmm. You can't see if they can think on their feet. You can't see if they can improvise or make changes. It's overly rehearsed for some.
Yeah.
Those with money...
Yeah,
they have the most amazing lighting system in their home, the most amazing microphones with processors that really give them a deep, rich voice, the makeup, the glamour. It's so staged, and I think that's going to be the wave because they've gotten used to it now.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've heard, and because they don't want to deal with leasing spaces and cattle, casting calls and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just hate them.
That's directed some films and produced some stuff. Let's say you do your 2-minute monologue one way, and I say, "Hey, Bobby, switch it up."
Yeah.
Be depressed. Or, Bobby, switch it up. Be
that's
happy.
And that's what I like right. to be. Because the one thing that I'm always complimented on when I do go for theatrical auditions or whatever is I'm complimented on my following direction.
Yeah.
When they say, do that, you know. But the self-tapes are just awful.
That short film that I produced with Tisha, that starred Tisha.
Which in it, I'm in it.
The one you were in.
Yeah.
So
I was Man with Cell Phone.
You nice. Were Man with Cell Phone. The gentleman who's just a comic genius, Joel Bryant, who plays Tisha's husband in that, for a different film we were doing. And he wasn't right for this other film we were doing. And I said to Tisha, I said, he's really good for the one we're going to do. So I happened to have the sides on me.
Wow.
And I said, hey, would you read this? I know you didn't prepare for it.
Yeah.
It's another thing that we're going to be doing about 2 months from now. But I think you'd be perfect for it, and he nailed it.
That's awesome.
Wouldn't have happened with a self-tape.
Well, Jeffrey Brooks, who has Red Rock Entertainment, I don't know if you've ever crossed paths with him or, Google him, whatever. He's a friggin' awesome guy. And he has Red Rock Entertainment. It's a very successful company in North Hollywood. But I studied with him when I first got to town. And that's one of the first things he was great. He wasn't like just trying to get our dough out of us, you know. But he's like, look, you can go to a commercial audition or a theatrical audition or whatever, and you might not be what they want, but they're going to cast you for something else. And that's always something to be positive about. And then the casting people don't even know what kind of a find they're going to have. That's how I got my Speedo commercial, because they wanted somebody that was really skinny and hairless. And my manager at the time...
You were perfect.
They sent me to the audition. Wow. And I'm not ashamed of anything. And the guy's like,
you
need
to see
it. And before he even had the camera set up to go, I was in my boxers. He turns around and goes, you're not shy, are you? And if it pays.
Yeah.
But they wanted something completely different.
Yeah.
But the self-tapes, I got to tell you, it's my manager, Christina, who is great. CA talent. Christina Scott. She was married to one of the... she used to... Kathy St. George used to crash on Christina's couch when they lived in Manhattan after they'd come home from Studio 54 and that sort of thing.
Oh, that's
Kathy
cool.
St. George Playboy.
Yeah. Yeah, she was my co-host.
Thank you, Al.
She was my co-host. But she's so much fun, though. She's got a story about everything. But where was I going with this? I'm having so much fun here. La, la, la. Oh, self-tape. Because at the beginning, and my partner Dennis is a great guy, and he's not in the industry.
Yeah.
The only time that we ever fight,
uh-huh.
is when he's self-taping me because I give a crap about technology.
Oh my God, it's the worst, it man. When a significant other helps you with your self-tape, I refuse. I refuse. One, it always has to be my best friend Matt. He can just direct it well. I can freak out, have a nervous breakdown in front of him, question my whole life's existence, and he's just like, okay, and now we're going to keep going. And I'm like, thank you so much, Matt. If it's someone I'm dating, I will murder, skin them, and be like, peace out, dude. We're never talking again.
Seriously, and we really fight about it.
But oh, yeah, it's horrible.
So I had, and I shouldn't be saying this because Christina, this might get back to her, and I swear I put 100% into everything I do, but I was just so over the self-tapes, and it was an audition for a 55 to 65-year-old, which naturally I fit, who there's some new product coming. Is it okay if I just, I'm not going to mention any names, but there's some new product coming out that's supposed to be an affordable hearing device that you're going to be able to get at Walgreens and that sort of thing. And I was so just, because I had done a couple of things earlier in the week, And they're just they wear me out. They take it's easier to drive from Santa Monica to Pasadena.
Yes, I would rather do that. I would rather walk into a room for 5 minutes, leave, and be like, cool, I never have to think about that again.
Well, so it was just for this hearing device, and I think I was a little hungover from the night before, and I'm like, I just don't feel like doing this. Because, like, we live, Dennis and I, we're like fraternity brothers.
Yeah.
I mean, the toilet's clean and the sink is clean and the dishes are done, but other than that, I'm like, somebody needs to pick up that underwear off the living room. You know, we're just like guys, which means self-tape. We got to move everything around and blah, blah, blah. Well, I was so over it. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. Because the guy's supposed to be opening a box and taking out the product. Well, I had this mannequin arm, and I had this big box from Chewy.com that the mannequin arm fit into. I'll probably lose my manager over this. So I open the box, and I go, and I take the mannequin arm out, and I put it behind my ear, and I'm like, wow, this thing really works.
Wow.
And I submitted it. So I'm like, they're either going to, they're probably going to, you know, like I said, maybe they'll think that's funny.
Yeah.
And they'll put me in something else. But those self-tapes are awful.
So are you, because I don't act and I don't desire to.
Yes.
Are your auditionings now picking up because the industry is opening?
To a degree, yeah. Yes, they have been. I also just got a new manager, so mine have been in general. Thank you. Yeah, it's been cool. My cousin actually just bought me this fancy light. Speaking of people with fancy lights, it was $700. I was like, you're insane. I have a ring light, and now I have a $700 light. So I look great in all my self-tapes.
Was this the cousin I met?
Yes.
Yes.
My cousin Blaine.
Yes. I like Blaine. I just can't talk politics with Blaine.
I mean, technically, you can talk politics with me. It doesn't mean we agree. It's the same thing with Blaine. Blaine just, he's very smart. He's just a little bit more vocally, I just don't care. That's the difference. Blaine cares a lot still. I'm from LA. I stopped caring a long time ago.
There you go.
Yeah.
And now we see why California is the way California is.
Hey, listen, Ralph. First off, we described myself 31. I'm 31 years old, by the way. I may look like a baby, but I am not. And we've discussed, we already know I'm a Democrat, everyone. So I don't have no shame in it. But we also discussed, what did you call it, an 80s Democrat?
Right, you are. You're actually a...
metal, dude.
You're a JFK Democrat.
All right, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are absolutely you know what the Democratic Party should still be?
I'm not going to get in. I don't need anyone trying to throw shit at me.
I have never disparaged you. I have never.
No, you have not. And I have not for you. Right. For you, I have not as well. We can have conversations, and that is why this is the OK Boomer.
I even put you on to produce one of my films.
You have. We're very much make things together all the time.
Exactly.
Like this.
Yeah. So
we can agree to disagree.
This is how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah.
How dare somebody just assume that because I'm wearing a khaki shirt, a pants and a button-down shirt that I'm a Republican.
Did you know?
And that people got so friggin' nasty about it, you know, and they're like, well, what are you? And I'm like, you know what? I'm not even going to tell you.
They make you explain yourself, and that's where I have a hard time, too, because, like, there's this whole idea that, like, I don't have to explain anything to you, actually. Like, and on Facebook, I'm not going to convince you to change your whole life view.
God.
Like, so that's the last thing I go on social media for is, like, I post videos of dogs.
Right.
And then I barely go on because when I do, I want to throw up, and it makes me feel really bad and guilty. And, like, I understand using a platform for a purpose if you have one and using your voice for one if it's needed or if I have friends that need me to use my voice in some way, I will. But I'm also not going to superimpose the purpose of this thing that was supposed to make me feel good to begin with to make it me not feel good anymore.
Or be judged if I don't agree.
Yes.
See, you remind me a lot of my brother politically. And the point is
I like your brother.
He's a great guy, isn't he?
I know, just kidding. He's
really a great guy. And the thing about it is that, you know, he won't get in your face. I mean, I really respect.
And I even gave his son free advice.
Huh? No, that was, his step-nephew?
Yep.
We just moved to Manhattan, and he's doing, you should keep in touch with that kid.
Did you know a guy named William Thibodeau? William Thibodeau. He's Michael Woods' best friend. He was mostly a Barney's guy, but he was also a Dantana's guy. Silver hair.
I think I do.
Glasses. Mm-hmm. Very opinionated. Really a pain.
Oh, yeah.
Really a pain
exactly
in the ass.
Exactly who you're talking about now.
Exactly. He was a very good friend of mine. He just passed recently, but.
I'm sorry to hear
that. He's also came out as gay, probably in his late 30s or something like that. But he once told me that it's easier for him, because he's from the South, he's from Detroit. It's easier for him to go into a Republican bar and say he's gay than go into the Abbey and say he's a Republican.
Exactly. And that's just it.
We lost dialogue, and I like dialogue.
It's nice to be able to talk to somebody. Now, you know, you can get on, you know, but somebody that will listen to what you have to say, whether you agree or not. That's the whole, like you just said, the whole point about it.
Sure.
Is sharing ideas, because there might be something that you would think about and go, you know, I never put it in that perspective.
I mean, that's why the extremes on both sides are bad, right? Because it's like I've tried to have a conversation with people that I know are on the extreme right, and they scream at me and call me a whole bunch of names, and I'm like, you have no idea. I'm not even going to argue with you, because it's besides the point. But you can do the same thing with someone on the extreme left, and they're going to argue and call you names too. So it's just like this idea of this give and take and how to have conversations and to disagree with people and still be able to walk away and it not be this like weird war it's with relationships too in the smallest senses.
And that's what I wanted to share with you, because you are a very good writer.
Oh, thank you.
No, you really are a very good writer.
Except sometimes I forget to put apostrophes after formal names.
Well, that's
yes, that's a personal joke. That's a personal joke.
What you call it, the proofreaders for. Right?
Yeah. That's right. I mean, that's what I assume. I am the proofreader.
But that's why you have to understand how the other side, other side is, thinks and acts and reacts.
Yes.
Otherwise, your scripts are bland.
Sure.
Not you personally.
Yes.
But scripts are bland. And I think that is what's helped me as a writer, is I do understand how both sides think. And
yeah.
I can write women well. I can write Democrats well. I can write gay folks well. I even sold a reality show on trans women. I understand what people want.
Could you write something for me?
I did.
The big old burly one that when people say, are you gay, I go, surprise.
I had an Archie Bunker piece for you, but then COVID hit and then money got tight and all that other fun stuff. But I can write those roles because I do understand. I'm not closed mind to it.
Yeah.
It's all about disagreeing without personalizing.
Sure, and there's a level of it too with that, like even, you know, being able to take in other information. Like it's the same with writing. If I was closed-minded and thought all my ideas were great and that my belief system was great, then I wouldn't take in other people and I wouldn't be molding and growing. But because I'm constantly aware that there is no end to growth, I have to be able to take in information to get better. So people may have, you know, their input and I'm going to take it in. But there's so many people who are just too defensive about it with everything on both sides, for sure.
Well, you wrote a very good stage play.
When you guys write...
Well, thank you.
I want to hear about that before I forget. When you guys write, though, like when I write my comedy, I have to be in the zone. And I'll have 2,000... I didn't use my phone for anything.
Yeah.
And I'll have 2,000 different pieces of paper that I'll write all over the place, and I put them in Ziploc bags, and I'll throw them in a drawer in my kitchen.
Oh, that's crazy.
Well, because one day...
It's cool. It's insane.
Well, because... And then one day, I'm like, you know what? I feel like writing today. And I'll take those bags to the public library...
Yeah.
And get a table like this, and I'll just go around and I'll categorize them. You know, work, you know, home, cat, dog, that sort of thing. And I take out my spiral notebooks, and it feels so good when the ideas are clicking and they're flowing.
Yeah.
You know? And I just do it the same kind of way when you guys write scripts like that.
I do a cheat. So when I think of a story that I want to write, I think of the characters, and then I think of people that I know personally or friends or family, or people that I know like in history that I know pretty well, and I put their names in for the character name. So when I get to them, like my cousin AJ... So I'll have a character as AJ. I know exactly how AJ talks. I know how he thinks.
Brilliant.
And then I go back and I change all the names later.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, I think it changes based upon the project in general. But it's like from being an actor and being like trained in certain techniques, it's like I can think of things in exercises. And I'm like, okay, I have this thing, this feeling that I want to get out. It's this emotional ballpark. What emotional exercise can I put into in the construct of like a door and activity? I could write this scene and these people that I know from either real life, people watching growing up, can include them, and how would they react in the scene if this was an exercise? And then you build from there. That's how my play started, was a door and activity.
Yeah, what's
for a Meisner?
So
yeah,
your play that you wrote is loosely based on real events.
Yes,
were people that were loosely based upon
yes.
in the audience, and how did they take it?
My mom never saw it, if that's what you're referring to. My mom never saw it. I gave her the opportunity to read it. Also, you know, I've explained this to people multiple times, like what they would say. One of my acting teachers, he used to always say this. He's like, they don't make movies about disappointment.
Right.
And so it's like in the... at this day, at this hour, this crazy thing happens and this person reacts in this way. It's not 100% how my mom is or anything. It's like, it's a cartoon character, and it's also a little jilted and different than how she normally is. So I had to explain this to her, even though she's an actor and she should know better, not to take it so personally. And I gave her character such a good arc, and she didn't even know that or care. But I'm like, we never even had this relationship. I'm like, she hugs you and apologizes and accountable. I'm like, you tell me to fuck off and then ask me if I want to go shopping the next day. So I'm like, come on, woman. But then the other people that, yeah, I had an ex-boyfriend before who the character was based off of, like the crappier ex-boyfriend in the beginning. And we had gotten back together and he sat in the audience and watched it. And his favorite band was Weezer, and the whole thing is like this Pinkerton shirt. When she's like breaking up, and like she cuts up the shirt because she goes crazy because he asked for his shirt back when they're breaking up. And I remember him sitting there, and he's like, at the very end of the play, he's like, "That wasn't about me, right?" And I was like, no, it wasn't. He's like, "Okay,
not
good."
At all.
He's like, "It was really funny. I just figured it wasn't about me." And I was like, "Yeah, no, not at all." I was like, "You morons. Everything's about you. Every person who's ever done me wrong in life, prepare for a play, a novel, a TV show."
Oh my God, we have the author Taylor Swift in the house, please, ladies
yeah.
and gentlemen.
I mean, welcome. What is the quote? If you didn't want to be written about, that. You shouldn't right. behave so poorly. Yeah. Like, thank you.
Don't make such a spectacle.
Yeah,
yourself.
I'm like, thank you for the years of material.
You know, I saw one of the greatest memes. It says, yeah, Taylor Swift is tough. She writes songs about, you know, her ex-boyfriends, how mean and blah, blah, blah they are. What's her name? I just spaced on her name. Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, dude.
Actually puts her ex-boyfriends on stage and tells them yep. what the hassle they are.
Yeah, no. Really? Well, I'm Stevie Nicks, dude.
That's pretty awesome.
I want you to know, Ralph, Stevie Nicks would have her ex-boyfriend sit in the audience and be like, enjoy.
That's right.
Enjoy this play. So that's my life, dude.
That's awesome. I yeah. can't wait to get familiar with more of your work.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well,
this
we
is a blast.
Yeah.
We have 3 or 4 minutes left here to this show. We want to also thank the Pineapple Hill Saloon,
yes.
our sponsor, our only sponsor. And we're accepting more sponsors, so anybody that wants to get on the show, just let me know. What do you got coming up there, Big Bob?
Zero.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm just starting to get back into
Xanax,
it.
Xanax, Vicodin.
Oh, you mean like tonight?
Pizza. Wow.
But as far as any projects like we discussed, right. I don't know what I'm going to do as my rent-paying job.
Right.
So if anybody out there has a job, you know, you can reach me at Robert Densmore Dean Jr. at roadrunner.com. I know everybody goes,
Roadrunner.
What's yeah. your middle name?
Densmore.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm named after the Densmore clan of Sullivan's Crossing, Virginia.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, it's my Aunt Virginia, who was a matriarch of the family. She was so cool. God rest her soul.
Can we get a story about a Hugo?
Oh, yeah.
You
thank
have
you.
Like a minute.
The Hugo. Okay, you guys Google it.
You have a minute and a half. Yeah.
I'll make it a minute and a half. It was a tiny little car that was very inexpensive, and I worked at a Chrysler dealer, because the reason why I got a job selling cars is because I wanted a free car. And a buddy of mine was a manager there. That's how I got into the car right. game. And I was the weakest closer. That's why I couldn't lie to people. So I couldn't, you know, I couldn't jack them around on their trade-in and stuff. That's why I was a horrible salesman. But I knew everything about the car. The Hugo, we get the franchise. People would come on the lot, $500 down, $149 for 4 years. They were like hotcakes flying off the thing. So I was the number one Hugo salesman as far as volume.
How'd you get into a Hugo? You know how big you are?
You know what it was? No. They're like the size. I actually think they were Fiats.
Okay.
And because if you look back at old Fiats and old European cars, it was really appointed nicely. It looked like a really good value. It really did. But every morning on the show, we'd be standing. It was at Star Chrysler Plymouth on Charlotte Avenue in Nashville, Tennessee. And you could see the tow trucks coming down off the expressway with all these Hugos on the back. And they would only come four cars. So my favorite Hugo story is... Because they were horrible. I tried to convince people not to buy them. You know, when I realized how horrible they were.
Yeah.
Because the managers are watching you from upstairs. But I'd go, don't buy it. It's a horrible car. But my favorite story is this policeman comes on the lot. It's Friday afternoon. The sky is dark, dark, dark. And he's in uniform. And he's like, he was mean. I want to test drive a Hugo. I'm like, yes, sir. Right this way. We go up around. We're coming down. We're sitting in the on Charlotte Avenue, rush hour Friday traffic, and the sky just lets loose and it's pouring down rain. And it's, officer, their windshield wipers are directly to the left on this column. He clicks them on, they go, woo! And at the same time, they simultaneously flew off the car. And he looks, and of course, we're at a dead stop. And he like looks at me like this. And I go, not to worry. And I jump out of the car. And of course, I'm immediately soaked through to my boxers. I run around, and this is a woman in a big old Buick who's just like, and I, because they both landed on her hood. And I'm like, excuse me, ma'am. And I go over, I'm like, turn off the wipers. And the little rotor stopped moving. And I go, bam. Bam, and I get back in the car. I'm like, good as new. And nice. He bought it.
Thank you for that story.
Wow.
Victoria, what do you have to end with today?
Don't behave poorly if you don't want to be written about. I'm just going to end up. You want me to? I'm going to throw a quote at you, Ralph. I don't know. Be good. Be a good person. Be good. Be good people.
Okay, you don't want to, nothing you're promoting.
Oh, you mean like, I was giving a thing. I'm coming up with some artistic stuff coming up. I don't know.
Are you still doing the charity at the theater?
Yeah, we do homeless meal prep every Sunday there. So oh, it's fantastic. The homeless. Yeah, it's a homeless alliance for the NoHo Homeless Alliance. So what, if anyone wants to donate anything,
there you go. What church yes. is it?
St. Matthews.
St. Matthews. Hold on. We have to say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Can I come back?
Please.
You're listening to OK Boomer with Ralph Odierna and Victoria Greenwood, only on LA Talk Radio.